flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carl is day-to-day right now. Was it a shin injury?
It is a shin. Good call. So the thing that covers up the computer that you act like the access panel, right? That you would get to all the computer stuff inside of our little office desk thing here. I say little, it's big. Fell off. Now, it's been off, but I guess it wasn't screwed back in. It was just kind of hanging there. And I must have kicked it or something. I don't know. I jarred it. And it fell
Blame yourself, Carl.
It fell right on my shin, so I have a little bit of a cut. Thank God I have a first aid kit in my bag.
Hey, profile and courage, ladies and gentlemen. Carl will continue the broadcast.
Yes.
But I will say this. You know, in this very litigious society that we live in, I'm just saying.
Are you saying that I should do something about this?
No. I'm just saying if it was my shin.
You would be doing something about this.
I would be documenting this injury. I think you need to take some photos. Yeah. Now, great that I am your witness, but I would be calling John Foy right now. I think you got to get ahead of this now.
So I've moved that access panel over since it's not screwed in. But yeah, that's what you guys heard, and that's when I was.
I mean, it sounded devastating. That sounded like a good 25-pound piece of wood landing on your shin.
Okay, why are you going there? Because it really is.
Now, by the way, for the record,
this thing's heavy.
My father did want me to be a lawyer, but of course, I couldn't. Who's going to deal with all that college? Certainly not me. But I always do love to play like sort of like armchair litigator in situations like this and how you would present the evidence. Needless to say, somebody has not taken care of the work environment which you are dutifully employed in.
No, this is true. By the way, did you finish the OJ doc? Have you finished it yet?
No. That's like 6,000 things I'm watching.
It's so good.
I'm in episode 3 of OJ,
which
is just unbelievable. Again, that's on Netflix. We were talking about that. I just started Paradise on Hulu.
Good, isn't
which
it?
I love the premise. I don't want to give it all away, but it's a nice twist after the first episode.
Yeah,
you'll
good.
Be privy to it.
Told you guys.
But yeah, there's a million good things going on, man.
Yeah. I had somebody over the weekend stop me. Oh, it was one of my buddies, my golf buddies, and said, hey, I heard you talking about that Paradise. My wife and I started watching it, and we fell in love. I think it's 3 episodes out right now, but I think, you know, every Thursday or Friday or whatever. But yeah, it's a pretty good show. Either way, I'm okay, and it is wrapped in bandage, and I'm not bringing any losses.
We get some Bactine on that, man.
I know. I had some in my bag.
Next thing you know, man.
You never know what you're going to get into, Mike.
That thing gets infected. Now, the good news, you get a good parking space the rest of your life, but I don't think you want to go through that, Carl.
You talking about handicap?
Yes, I think you got to be careful with this.
Dark, isn't it? He just went down a dark path.
I'm just saying, if it gets infected, you know, you get gangrene.
Now I'm going to lose a leg for a parking spot.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
I don't want to do that. Hey, man, let's talk some dogs. All right. Who did well at the Senior Bowl last week? Bunch of dogs were there. Our buddy Connor Riley is here to join us from Dog Nation. Connor, who helped themselves last week?
Yeah, I think the two guys that really jump out to me are Smile Mundon, the linebacker, and Trevor Etienne, the running back. Smile looks like a great athlete out there. The biggest thing with him, it's never been ability. I thought he played great to close this stretch of season for Georgia. It's been availability, and when he goes to Indianapolis as a part of the NFL scouting combine, how he does on his medical checks are going to determine where he ultimately ends up going in the NFL draft. And then with Trevor Etienne, kind of in a similar note, was limited this year because of injury and then obviously missed a game because of suspension. But he really impressed from the jump in his time there in Mobile. And I think for him in particular, really validated the decision to enter the NFL draft. I know at first there was some confusion as to whether or not he had actually entered, and then he ultimately does so, leaving some maybe frustrated that he elected to do so. But the week that he had in Mobile last week, I think further validates why he elected to go into the NFL draft, and he certainly helped himself in front of evaluators last week in Mobile.
I know that we spent a lot of time on it, certainly last year. I mean, now this the end of the season, but it just seems like it was unfilled, untapped potential, right? If that's the legacy of Trevor Etienne's time in Athens.
Yeah, and it never started on the right foot, obviously, with the offseason arrest. And then, you know, he plays really well against Texas in that regular season game, scores 3 touchdowns. And then that game against Florida, suffers a rib injury early in that game and just really never got going again in the regular season, obviously bounced back in the win over Texas in the SEC championship game, but then sort of stumbles again in that loss against Notre Dame where he does have that key fumble on their first real scoring chance there. I think that's a great way to put it where, you know, 9 touchdowns, over 600 yards rushing, and I don't put the rushing issues that this team had on Trevor Etienne, but just statistically speaking, his worst year in college came at the University of Georgia, and I think it's fair to wonder what could have been had the circumstances been better for Trevor, both of his own doing, but also the support around Etienne as well.
Connor, I know that guys are finally speaking out, guys that are coming back, even guys that are leaving, they're upset about the Notre Dame loss. It's the first time since, 2020 that the Dogs suffered 3 losses? Alabama, Ole Miss, Notre Dame. So, look, it's not a down year, but that's the standard when you don't win the championship now at Georgia and you go, well, it's a down year and you win 11-3. Welcome to Nick Saban and Alabama's world.
Right.
What do you do or what do they need to do to not have that happen again next season?
And that's the big question this offseason, Carl, because it's not like there's easy changes to make there. So far, there hasn't been any coaching turnover, and I'm not necessarily believing that there's going to be any at this point in time unless somebody gets hired off of this staff. So it's little areas. Where can you improve it? And one thing is sort of digging back and going through it. Georgia got a good bit worse on third down, both on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball this season. They were number 1 last year in the country in opponents' third down conversion rate, and they were number 2 in the country in their own third down conversion rate. They both slipped in that regard this year. And when you're playing a schedule as tough as they did this season, it just makes the margins all that much slimmer. And so in an area like third down, that's something where you've got to be better. And going forward, look, those margins that Georgia prioritizes, they do very well in field goal positioning and field position in that sense, are going to be more important as I think the talent gap just gets reduced in college football because of NIL and because of the transfer portal. Georgia's still going to be better off than most, to your point. I think the only teams that would maybe take their season over what Georgia had would be Ohio State, Notre Dame, and maybe Oregon in that regard. But at Georgia, winning 11 games and getting into the college football playoff, winning the SEC is great. But if you lose the last game of your season, there are going to be a lot of hard questions that you have to face in the offseason. And Kirby Smart certainly dealing with that right now.
It's our man Connor Riley, guys, from Dog Nation. As you pointed out in your article, Joe Klatt from Fox basically saying it was a down year. Because, you know, when you go back-to-back natties, you're right. There's just a level that, you know, fans are expecting. You always knew it was going to be a tough row to hoe when you think about all of the schedule, all this tough teams on the schedule. Real quick, though, when you look at this year, and I know we've talked a lot about the offensive line, do you really feel that Stacey Searles can actually improve? We'll have 4 new faces, and they'll be better than the guys who just left?
I think the thing that they're hoping for, because, again, they don't bring anyone in via the transfer portal, and the last freshman to start on this offensive line, true freshman anyway to do so, came back in 2018. So they're banking on the talent that they've had at that offensive line position. They've recruited very well at that spot over the years. They have some guys that they need to step forward. This group never found their best 5-man offensive line combination a year ago. Injuries were a big part of that, and injuries are just a part of football. Some years you get lucky in that regard. Some years you don't. I don't think Georgia was particularly lucky there on the offensive line. But as far as Stacey Searles, there's a segment of the Georgia fan base that is never going to approve of Stacey Searles because of what happened when he worked here when Mark Richt was the offensive line coach. But in 2022 and 2023, this offensive line was one of, if not the best offensive lines in the country. So when you go from that to what they had this year, which I think in looking back on it, at the very best you could say was substandard, at maybe worse you could say was just outright bad offensive line, they've got to get back to where they were. And I still believe in the talent there to do so. And Stacey, more often than not at his time as Georgia, has shown an ability to get there. But if the offensive line struggles again this year, it's a real easy solution. They're going to have to go out there and find someone who can get this offensive line back playing at an elite level.
Well, Connor, as we talk about the dogs and moving forward, let's look at spring and what the goal is going to be, because believe it or not, right before you realize it, it's going to be time for G-Day. What's going to be the focus there as we talk about spring ball?
I think the biggest thing is the quarterback position, Gunnar Stockton, the presumed favorite here. How much does Ryan Puglisi, I think, make this a competition in the spring? They're going to give Gunnar and Ryan a lot of first-team reps. This is a huge opportunity for Gunnar Stockton. You can draw whatever conclusions you want from the Texas and Notre Dame games. I would point out that I don't think there's two harder, maybe Ohio State opponents you could have faced in your first two real extended first team action than Texas and Notre Dame. So I think Gunnar has the ability to get better, and they've surrounded him with better talent at the wide receiver position, both through the transfer portal and the wide and the recruiting ranks. And so, again, I think the big thing going forward, you need to see what you have in Gunnar Stockton and what he can do. But at the same point in time, I think just about everyone agrees, and players told me this in the locker room after the game, they need to be better around the quarterback position so that it's not all on Gunnar Stockton's shoulders like it felt often during the 2024 season with Carson Beck. That's just a tough place to put any quarterback in that situation.
It's Connor Riley, the Fast and the Furious Connor Riley. What the hell, man? What are you, the dragway? He's with us here on the WaitFor.com hotline. So, yeah, we brought this up earlier in the year. Marshall and Austin Peay to kind of ramp things up. You don't have to dive in. Obviously, they handle their business with Clemson. But, you know, then you hope he's ready to go, because even – I guess the argument you could make, Connor, is when you throw him in to a game like that SEC championship against Alabama, with everything, I mean, against Texas, I should say, with everything that was happening, he can handle that atmosphere. He can handle going up to Neyland in this, you know, in an SEC start against the Volunteers.
We're going to know a lot about this Georgia team, Mike, at the end of September, because I 100% agree with you in the sense that, like, getting thrown in at halftime of the SEC championship game, I know Neyland's going to be rocking. It's always rocking when Georgia plays there. It'll probably be a night game, just given the size of those two brands. I'm sorry, but what Gunnar did in the second half of that Texas game was a lot more difficult than what he's going to have to do going into Neyland there. And then after that, they get a bye week, and then they play Alabama at home. And if you're Georgia and you can get through that first month with a 4-0 record with wins against Tennessee and Alabama, games they're going to be favored in my opinion, and they're going to have to go out there and actually win. And Alabama, that's easier said than done, because Kirby Smart is 1-6 in his career against Alabama. And lately, more often than not, they've been the more talented team than Alabama and still found ways to lose to them. But if you're able to get through that first month with a first-time, full-time starting quarterback in Gunnar Stockton, whoever it ultimately is, and with a 4-0 record, I think that really sets you up to have, again, another season where you're at least getting into the playoff. And as you saw with a team like Notre Dame this year, if the path opens up for you, you can find yourself in a national championship game and a few possessions away from winning it. Georgia, that's the floor for Georgia. And if you get through that first month with a first-time starting quarterback and you're able to pick up wins against Tennessee and Alabama, where Tennessee, they have some major questions this offseason, and Alabama, you're finally getting them at home for the first time since 2015, I think you're going to be in a pretty good spot given the offseason that they're going to go through.
Connor, great stuff. Tell the people where they can follow you, man.
Yep, you guys can follow me on Twitter, at @KConnorRiley. We've got a ton of stuff this week. Super Bowl, obviously a ton of Georgia representation there. 8 guys playing in this game, so we're going to have a lot of stuff for you out of that.
Great stuff. We will talk to you next week. Thanks so much. Coming up, guys, Roger Goodell, State of the NFL. He is addressing the media. We're going to tell you what he said about 18 games and what else is being talked about down there in New Orleans. Coming up. Before we tell you what Roger Goodell's talking about in New Orleans, it's Super Bowl week, guys. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. This hour, again, is brought to you by our friends at Mark Spain Real Estate. Turtle, you said that there was a pitcher who was signed for, and we say in baseball terms, little of nothing, and you wonder why the Braves were not in on this. Let's talk about this for a second. Who are we talking about, Turtle?
Yeah, so a guy that was traded in the middle of last year went to a team that, won the World Series and started game one for them. That was Jack Flaherty. Mm. And he was made available this offseason for 2 years and $35 million. Nary a report linking the two, meaning the Braves and Flaherty.
I mean, I get it. You know, we talked about Scherzer on Friday because he's so old now at age 40, coming off of 9 games, but I still take him over Grant Holmes and Ian Anderson, and the same would go for Jack Flaherty. Braves fans have been kind of gaslit a little bit to accept that this is just the way you do your pitching. It's not. I mean, they just never have enough pitching. You're hoping that Strider comes back. Like, we love the job that Alex has done. 2021 is 4 years ago. You know, I mean, the genius thing has a statute of limitations, and he's just cheap. So let's get some pitching. You know, that's you're letting some good options fly by, Carl, and it's a little disconcerting for Braves fans.
Well, and here's the other thing. I mean, unless they know about some arms in-house that we are not familiar with, meaning guys that they are going to give a shot here at spring training and they feel really good about. I was just, you know, talking to somebody the other day about the Braves minor league system and, you know, what it was, which ultimately led us to a World Series, and what it currently is. And the perception is it's not that good. The reality is it's still pretty good. But, Mike, we're not as familiar with a lot of these guys. So I'm with you. Like, that's the thing. It's not as if you've got three legitimate arms waiting in the wings to come up and you're going to start these guys.
Right.
You know, you're playing this by a wing and a prayer right now. So, yeah, that's a little frustrating. That listen, the reasonable deals are frustrating because, again, there's no reason we could not have been in on them. The deals that, you know, when we start talking about these $100, $150, $200 million deals, those become unrealistic because the Braves just haven't done that. And so that's why when we talk about some of these names, whether you want them or not, that's not the point. The point is, here's a guy that you know what he can give you. Mm-hmm. He can give you X amount of starts, X amount of innings. Mike, that's something you can count on and hang your hat on. And we have shied away from a lot of these reasonable deals this offseason.
Right. Look, you wish that Bryce Elder had lived up to the expectations after making the All-Star team. He's kind of just been that yo-yo between Gwinnett, right? You know, it doesn't have, like, lights-out velocity, so he's got to do it with guile, and he hasn't been able to do that. They kind of figured him out. Ian Anderson, this is his last chance at the rodeo. You know, A.J. Smith-Shawver, been hearing about that for, like, 2 years.
Yep.
So and you just get to the point where, like, just proven pieces at a discount, which has kind of been our MO, to Chris's point about Jack Flaherty. So, yeah, man, just want to see that, because, you know, heaven forbid, we get back in that same old scenario where, you had bats went ice cold 2 years ago. This year let's be honest, they overachieved by any metric. But still, you are wasting the core group. You're wasting this team, which you devoted all this money to lock them in. And then why are we doing pitching on the cheap? I'll never understand it.
And real quick, guys, while we're on the baseball beat here, real quick, something we will follow, a developing story, as we like to say on Dukes and Bell, MLB umpire Pat Hoberg has been fired for sharing a betting account with a friend who bet on MLB games and for deleting messages related to an MLB investigation, per ESPN. There is no evidence Hoberg himself bet on the games or swayed any that he himself umped in.
Okay. That's always the concern. We talked about the Rozier situation with the NBA, and now they're looking back into his college days. The NBA did their own little review. Nothing to see here. And the feds are like, well, we're going to have our own look at this. And that's, you know, keeping the game legal. The umps, certainly, you know, that's one thing we've never had to really worry about. Like, you know, kind of like who is it? Who's the old dirty ref in the NBA? Tim Donahue.
Yes.
Tim Donahue.
Yep. They did a whole thing on him. And that is interesting because, again, when you start deleting, why are you deleting stuff? Like, that always makes me wonder, like, come on, what's that about? Either way, they'll do a proper investigation. If there's more there, more people will pay the price. Hey, coming up, we're going to talk about one of the biggest pieces in the NFL who wants out as part of our Falcon Report. I want to tell you a few things that Roger Goodell is speaking about today because, one, he is the commish. Two, these are things we're all wondering about. And, Mike, he's getting a lot of questions. He is literally speaking to the media as we do this show about the officiating.
Thank you.
And so he's probably been asked, as I was checking this out, 6 questions over the last 30 minutes about officiating. And it started with the Chiefs. And he was asked about the idea that officials favor the Chiefs. Of course, he said, quote, it's ridiculous. This is a theory, you know, that people talk about and it takes a life of its own. But he says it reminds him of the script idea where people talk about there's a script for the NFL. And he talks about how important officiating is. Then he was asked about the evaluation of officials.
Right.
And
that's my beef.
Well, he said, look, there is a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And so then he was asked, what about more transparency? And he says, guys, we've got like 30 cameras at these games. We're trying to be as transparent as possible. Right. You guys are seeing everything. Sometimes they get it wrong. I thought it was a pretty good answer because he's not lying. He goes, you go back 15, 20, 25 years ago, there was like 8 cameras and we didn't see everything.
Yeah, but now you got, you know, back then you didn't have billions of dollars being bet legally with your partners on the NFL. And there's even more impetus to get people, you know, involved in the sport and you want to get it right because now there's not just fans, but money on the line. My beef has always been, you know, what is the accountability? Why can't you spend more money in the community? What did you? Yeah, have an academy. You know, literally, have guys that come up, steal from the college ranks, find the best officials out there. Why do we skimp on what so many times, Carl, becomes the most important part of the equation? Why isn't, you know, and again, that's for the competition committee. Why don't we have pass interference reviewable again like it was for one season? But I'm glad the media is throwing it at him because, look, that worthy catch, which wasn't a catch, that's huge on the biggest stage of the year, the game to get to the Super Bowl.
It really was. What about an 18-game season? Quote, we haven't had any formal discussions on an extension. Guys, that's got to get passed through the Players Association, even if the owners want to do it, and we know they most do. That's something that's got to be amended in the CBA, and that's not going to happen overnight. But we do know that this is something that they've talked about. As far as the NFL and the hiring practices and DEI and all this stuff that's in the news, he says, we are not in the business of being in a trend. It's about attracting the best talents. And he talked about that whole deal with the Rooney Rule, and he's getting a lot of questions on that. Listen, he's fielding all these questions. Guys, this is the norm. They do the state of the state every year before the Super Bowl, and he does it to start the week, and then everything else kind of falls into place. But, Mike, sometimes we feel like we've been left empty after these press conferences with Roger Goodell because you're like, did he really answer that?
Well, look, he gets paid a lion's share because he's really good at it. I mean, look, he draws all the fire from the NFL owners. And even when things are completely wrong, he can convince you they're okay. You know, I mean, we all know that the officiating needs to improve. But he'll tell you that, well, we've taken leaps and bounds. We're much better in this area. He's a lawyer. He's an attorney. He's really good at this. He can talk in circles and convince you the sky is red.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what he does. But, and that's why, you know, anytime you have a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, in this case, the NFL is a hugely successful, now the biggest sports league in the world, you know, he's the guy that is on point. So he gets once a year his feet held to the fire, and for this they pay this man a lot of money. But at the end of the day, it's all empty. To me, it's just a lot of hot air because nothing ever gets changed. Nothing ever gets fixed. Why can't you get the officiating right? Yes, I know there's always going to be a human element, but now through replay, and maybe, Carl, if you simplified the rule book, it didn't have so many things. Like, it shouldn't take five sentences to tell you what a catch is. You know, things, they've just added this layers and layers of crap, which now we as fans just kind of go, yeah, you know, I know the ground can't cause a fumble. Sure it could. There was a time the ground caused a fumble. I watched it. It's called the 70s. But everything changed. And so now we're just called, just tied up in this, I guess for lack of a better word, Carl, legalese when it comes to how the game is called.
We'll see if he says anything worthy that we need to relay to you guys, but addressing all things in regards to the NFL and obviously the Super Bowl and what's going on down there in New Orleans. More on Roger Goodell coming up. If you're just joining us, the Mavs trading Luka Doncic to the Lakers. Obviously, AD going to the Mavs is a big deal, and it has been over the last 48 hours. Everybody's talking about it because we've never seen anything like it. We've never seen a first-team All-NBA guy get traded for another first-team All-NBA guy, and more importantly, in the same conference. So when this all shakes out and everybody's talking about, well, who got the better of the deal? Mike, I just think the concerns are less with AD than they are with a 25-year-old Luka, and you wonder if he's going to get it. Now, we've seen guys not get it for a while, and then things click, Mike, and they get it. And when I say get it, I'm talking about being committed. It's bigger than just going out and scoring 28 a night. Being the committed player, being the leader off the floor, not being a malcontent, Mike, being a guy that gets along with people off the floor, outside of the organization. I'm talking about the front office. All these things, like you hear now about what was going on with the Mavericks, just makes you think this guy was walking around feeling untouchable. Until yesterday.
Right. Now, we've debated because it was always going to be a hot-button issue here, the Trey versus Luka, the Hawks making that deal, you know, with the Mavs back in the day. Still guys out there won't give you an inch on that argument. Carl brought this up on Friday when we were at Twin Peaks. Great. I think we're up at Twin Peaks. Is it Friday, by the way, this week?
We are. We're at this Friday. We are at Buckhead.
Right on, man. So come see us and catch some wisdom. But no, you are breaking out. And Monday after the Super Bowl, we'll be back. And boy, we'll have a hangover.
Kennesaw.
Good place to be for some hair of the dog. But, man, you were talking about how people just don't give Trey his just desserts or his love, whatever. I mean, yes, they're both guys. Both guys were young. Trey's a year older than Luka, but both guys dealt with a degree of immaturity. That was my beef because I had a bunch of guys, real quick, I just want to mention this, because I had a bunch of guys on the text line, yeah, Mike, you're singing a different song. Guys, do you want me to say the same thing every day I come on the radio? In my 37 years on the radio, I've learned a few things. And if I get something wrong, I will say, hey, I got that wrong. I thought Trey was immature. I thought there was no leadership. I thought he was just a guy like, hey, I did my job, 25. What do you want from me? He's changed. He's evolved. So have I. My position on him has evolved. I'm not going to say the same thing when things have changed. It makes me an idiot. So, I mean, if I lock onto something, there's certain things which I believe and I feel strongly about, but things that I think, hey, the things have changed. I now know this. Okay, change my opinion. Trey is not the prima donna that Luka is. Luka is a lazy, selfish prima donna who won't keep himself in shape, who's got more God-given skills than Trey has. He's taller, he's bigger, but he doesn't maximize it. If Steph Curry came in here when Trey did, Steph Curry would just be a guy. I mean, let's be honest. You don't have the ability to put things around Trey that this guy Luke has had already in Dallas. So I can't tell you that the field is level, a level playing field, because Trey's never had the things that Luke has had, including the ability to be 6'8". Because he's only 6'1", and he does a hell of a lot. There's a lot of amazing things with the frame he does have in the NBA.
Yeah, I'll say, you know, this is the thing that I get a lot, and it makes me laugh. It's okay to have a change of opinion when the information changes. And I always say this to Mike. You go home today and you find your loved one with somebody else on the couch or in the bed, you are going to have a change of opinion than what you left this morning. The same applies to sports. And sometimes when we go in on guys and if they change, it's okay to change your opinion. It doesn't have to be what it was in 1999 or 2008. Right. I'm with you on this. And for Trey, what I'm hoping is that people see the light, that they see what he is becoming, and it's not what that is over there.
You know, you got Trey, an extra point guard. They sort of doubled him against the Heat. What he needed was a big-time power forward, a real true five that the guy could really pick and roll with, not John Collins launching threes. Come on.
What do we have coming up in Guy Talk, Mike?
I'll tell you what I got coming up. The Grammys. Who cares who won the Grammys? Did you see Kanye's wife's outfit?
How could you miss it?
And what the hell was Will Smith's kid wearing on his head? That and more coming up next in Guy Talk.